Well, here's the true and ugly story. So after I was done with my 2 years of teaching, I was recruited to be an assistant principal at a charter school in Dallas. And, I'd been a teacher for 2 years, so I had a lot of opinions about how I wanted things to be, but essentially didn't know anything. So I took the job because I was like, cool, I have this like really fun mix of lots of confidence coupled with lots of crippling self-doubt. So the decision to take the job was really much more based off of my periodic moments of lots of confidence. So I took the job and was there for maybe 2 or 3 months. I can't recall. And it was horrible. I was not qualified to be an assistant principal at a charter school. And it was an intense charter school with a lot of really strict rules. And I got so overwhelmed and hated it and ended up just quitting and just being like, I do not want to do this.
This is Aaron and Ash. You're listening to Path into Product, a show for students and professionals considering product management as a career. We interview actual product professionals and share their insights and tips for getting into the rewarding career that is product management.
Well, welcome back to Path into Product. We are thrilled this morning to have Sarah Detloff with us. Sarah is the head of product strategy at Campfire and has about 9 years in product management. Welcome, Sarah.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
We're excited. We always start with this question, and we're excited to hear your answer because everyone is different. And there's similarities, but how do you define product management?
How do I define product management? That's a great question. I think that the way that I typically describe it is I'm responsible for ensuring that the investments that we make in the software side of the business are in line with our overall company strategy. So that's through doing things like prioritizing the work that our engineering teams do, through understanding how our product strategy fits in with the overall marketing and sales strategy for our company, and ensuring that all of that is calibrated, as pretending that that's, like actually super realistic, but ensuring that all of that is calibrated according to how much we want to invest in the product itself.
Awesome. Love that. So if you can just dive just a little bit deeper there in what you mean by investments.
Yeah. So I think there's a really interesting thing about software development that I mean, I've primarily been in software development in my career, so I could definitely be wrong about this, but this is an observation that I have, which is because software development is so relatively cheap in the spectrum of product creation. Like, we're not talking about designing a new car for Ford, where we're spending millions of dollars in R&D, and then that's before we even get to the actual production and all of that. Because it's relatively inexpensive and because it's so ephemeral, like it's like nobody can necessarily see the product of what we do as product and software development companies. Like, you can if you are creating cars, for example, and you see them coming off the production line and they're all in a lot waiting to be purchased or not. There's oftentimes a very significant disconnect in the fact that even though we are not creating physical products, we are making investments of money in the things that we choose to do or choose not to do. in our product creation. And so I talk a lot about money and investment in product, because what I really need everyone around me to understand is, even though we don't have a physical product like a car or an iPod or shoes or, you know, whatever the equivalent may be that's much more tangible, we are actually investing in things. And so when we choose to create code, we're spending money. And when we choose to delete code, we've spent money that we're now we're throwing that away. And sometimes that's totally fine. I mean, let's be real, like that is fine a lot of the time. But that's why I focus on investments, because what we're doing is we are taking as hopefully as calculated and educated of guesses as we can into the things that we're choosing to spend money on within the product org. And then we're allocating that money according to our overall business strategy.
Awesome. I love that foundation on looking at the investments and the trade-offs. And yeah, there is something different about software than other types of products, right? The cars on a lot, you can see the production capability there, but not, it's a lot more difficult, or ephemeral is the word you used with software. I like that a lot. So let's dive a little bit into your path into product, Sarah. Where did your journey to becoming a product person, where did that start?
Yeah, I've thought about this so many times, because it's funny, because I think that there's this narrative in, I don't know what it's, if it's limited to like the United States, I doubt that, but there's this narrative that there's a linear path to things, that the way you can be the most successful is if you're 7 years old and you decide you want to be an astronaut, and then all of your hobbies and all of your extracurricular activity, like your major, everything is aligned to that. And that's really the only way that you can be the thing that you dreamed of being. And I, of course, am not at all that example. So I studied journalism at school. I honestly don't even know how I chose it. I literally don't even remember. I remember why I didn't choose the other things I was interested in, but I don't remember how I chose journalism. Did that. I graduated from college in 2009, and there were approximately, at that point, after the financial crisis, like 9 jobs in all of the United States, and none of them were in journalism. So I was sort of in a bit of a pickle. Ended up working at an online university in Utah called Western Governors University. And during that time, discovered an organization called Teach for America. I come from a family of university professors, and I was really attracted to the idea of teaching in an urban or rural school district and helping students advance academically. So I did that for a couple of years in Dallas, Texas. And when I was done with my 2 years, I really wasn't entirely sure what I wanted to do. Teaching was really rewarding, but very stressful. And I randomly found a position on Indeed.com that was advertising for a K through 12 ed tech startup. And having been a teacher, I thought, okay, cool. You know, I can do that. I applied. And luckily for me, they believed really positive, hopefully true things about me that I had done Teach for America. They just sort of assumed I knew what I was doing, which is beneficial. And they hired me. And that was my first sort of product management role. Now looking back, after all these years, I call it product management light, because I wasn't really doing a lot of the things that I ought to have been doing. The product function was so new even at that time. And then the owners of my company didn't even necessarily have a ton of knowledge about what that needed to be, at least from what I saw. So I did that for almost 2 years before moving from Dallas back to Utah, where I'm from, for my husband to go to school. And I ended up getting my first like real product management job at a company called School Improvement Network that did also K-12 software solutions. So it was very, honestly, it was a bit of a miracle for me that I ended up in something that I really enjoyed doing and knew essentially nothing about.
Yeah, so I'm curious, you know now that you enjoy doing it, and at the time you didn't know that and you didn't know anything about it. I'm curious, what led you to apply to this, you call it PM light position? Like you just said, oh, I've been a teacher. Here's a school that is teaching. I don't know what this role is. Like, why did you apply for that role?
Yeah. Well, here's the true and ugly story. So after I was done with my 2 years of teaching, I was recruited to be an assistant principal at a charter school in Dallas. And, you know, I'd been a teacher for 2 years, so I had a lot of opinions about how I wanted things to be, but essentially didn't know anything. So I took the job because I was like, cool, you know, I have this like really fun mix of lots of confidence coupled with lots of crippling self-doubt. So the decision to take the job was really much more based off of my periodic moments of lots of confidence. So I took the job and was there for maybe 2 or 3 months. I can't recall. And it was horrible. I was not qualified to be an assistant principal at a charter school. And it was an intense charter school with a lot of really strict rules. And I got so overwhelmed and hated it and ended up just quitting and just being like, I do not want to do this. So after that, I really was just like, well, I have no idea what I'm going to do now. And I need a job. I had just gotten married maybe like 6 months prior. And so I just applied for a lot of different things. I looked at other teaching jobs, and then I just stumbled upon the listing on LinkedIn, and they had quite a bit of like content subject matter expertise that was required for the role. And I figured I know how to do all of that. It was a test prep software. So students being able to prepare for their end of year state exams. I knew a lot about that from my time teaching. So I just took a swing. That was basically the long and short of it. I was desperate because I just quit a job overnight and I was looking for something to do. So very glamorous story.
that's awesome. So I love that you've kind of put yourself in a position that you thought you might do well in, and then you realize this is not what I want to do. You realize that pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And then you're also looking and realizing I can be a subject matter expert in this particular position. I might as well just go for it anyway, right? Which is cool, right? To have that initiative. And you call it product management light. Could you explain what you mean a little bit by the light part?
Yeah. So we had a general strategy for the business to create content associated with the standardized tests that students take at the end of the year. And I was responsible for the English and language arts portion of our product. So it was up to my colleague and I to determine what content we were going to cover, how we were going to create that content, how we were going to create either this for the strategy, how we were going to do that ourselves versus how we were going to farm that out to other creators. So I had to think a lot about how we wanted to meet the needs of our prospective customers. So it was product management light in that way, where we were having to make decisions about how we were spending that money and how the content was being created. But there was also a heavy amount of me just actually writing questions and sourcing all of the standards for each of the states that we were trying to sell to try to figure out how we aligned our content to the standards that they were teaching. So it was about like a 50-50 mix of content creation and then trying to figure out the appropriate strategy to get it done as fast as we could.
Okay, so let's flip that then, right? So you've got this product management light job that you're in, and then you apply to this other one where you called it your first quote unquote real product management job. So what difference did you see going from this light product management to this real product management job?
Yeah, so the job I had at School Improvement Network was the first time that I had a subset of features for a SaaS product that I was responsible for determining all of the strategy for how we were going to optimize those features. And then at one point I had up to 6 engineering teams that I was working with at one time to actually prioritize and develop these features. So it was my first foray. My boss there took a chance on me. Mark Albrecht is his name. He's a great friend and mentor of mine. Since then, you know, one of the interview questions he asked me was, you have, you know, a thing that you need to do, and you have 2 options for how you're going to get this thing done. Which one do you choose? And I, you know, with my limited experience, said, whichever one costs the least amount of money. And he said, correct, you're hired. So he really helped me to understand the business side of the decisions that we were making. And that was really my first opportunity to see a bit into the actual nuts and bolts. Because at my previous role, we had 2 engineers. So there really wasn't a ton that I was doing with the actual software development of the product. So that was my School Improvement Network was my first opportunity to start really broadening my exposure to what it meant to be a product manager. And then, you know, it was a very autonomous environment. And so Mark, my boss, gave me my features and said, you know, do what you want. Here are the resources that you have. So it was a really great learning environment for me.
That's awesome. So I want to ask another question that goes along with this. So you're done with your assistant principalship, right? You're looking for jobs, and you said you applied to a lot of jobs. I'm curious about what the decision was and what the thinking was of moving from this product management light job into this real product management job. Like, was that the same thing? You just applied to a lot of jobs, or was there more of a focus? And what was that focus? What were you trying to get out of your next role?
That's a great question. And I am probably going to have I don't want to say disappointing, but not that exciting answer. The truth is, I had a baby. I'm trying to recall, maybe, I think he was about a year old at the time. And we managed our lives, my husband and I, by me being able to work at home 2 days a week and work in the office 3 days a week. We'd organized all of our childcare around that. And given that my husband was going to be in school, he was coming to Utah to get an MBA, I really needed a job that I could continue that kind of flexibility, because my husband was going to have a really demanding schedule. So it's funny, because in my career, so much of it has been the linchpin of different decision points have been people that I know and that have advocated for me and that have maybe had a bit more foresight even than I have had for where I wanted my career to go. At that point, my number one priority was making sure that I was making money, since my husband was going to be in school, and that I had flexibility to take care of my son. And a friend of mine who I'd met through Teach for America was a product manager at School Improvement Network. And so I reached out to her as we were headed back to Utah and said, hey, that's what I do. I'd love to learn more about your company. Oh, and by the way, do they let you work from home? That was essentially, you know, question number 2. And when she said, yeah, because, you know, this was in 2013. And, you know, as everybody knows, that things have changed a lot in working from home. At that point, I felt like if I could find any job that would let me work from home so I could manage my childcare situation better, that I should just take it. And so I was really intrigued and interested in what my friend was doing there. I really enjoyed my conversations with Mark, who ended up being my boss. I felt, again, this is K-12 software. I know this stuff. I can definitely be a subject matter expert and help us determine what the right priorities should be for the things that we're developing. But I also applied for other jobs, like being an instructional designer. I got offered a job to be an instructional designer for another test prep for kids software company, but they wouldn't let me work from home. And I was so nervous to ask that question. I got all the way through the interview process before I asked the woman who would have been my boss, can I work from home? And she just was very adamant, no, we don't do that. So the decision was really easy for me. I got offered both of those jobs and I took the one that let me work from home so I could take care of my son. And it really wasn't until I had been working there for a few months that I thought, oh, like, I like this product management stuff. This is cool. Like, these are awesome decisions that I get to make, and I get to use my experiences and expertise from being a teacher to help make business decisions to help the overall success of the business. So it really, that's one of the things I struggle with when people ask me about how you get into product or you know, what was this grand plan you had? It's like, my grand plan was to make money and help take care of my son. and it's definitely evolved where I have grander plans now, but at the time that was really as simple as it was.
Yeah, I love the simplicity of what you're saying, right? Because oftentimes we hear great stories of, oh, I went and I founded a company and all this really cool stuff and whatever, but I think for most of us, it's just, these are the realities of life, and we're just trying to make the next step in the circumstances that we're in with the data that we have and make the best educated guess that we can. And I almost love how you had this choice, this meeting of pathways, right? Where do I go instructional design route and do I go product management route? And the differentiator didn't have anything to do with either of those disciplines. It was, which company lets me work from home, right? So that sets you on the product management path, which, awesome, we're glad to have you in the product space, right? But at the same time, it's like, life really is just a set of a series of decisions and circumstances that you don't always control. And I'm really glad that you chose that product position. Because you know, maybe we'd be here talking about instructional design on another side. And I think another thing I'm really resonating with this as well is I had a very similar path coming out of a teaching background, was accepted into like a master's program for instructional psychology and design instructional design masters, narrowly avoided that route, I should say, by falling into a product management position, you know, somewhere else. And so I think your story is really, it's really resonating with me. I think it will resonate with a lot of folks just because it's a simple human story, right? This is the reality of life and how we make career choices.
And absolutely. I really do think that there are so many narratives in our culture about what's required to be successful, that sort of like dogged determination to do a particular thing and never waver from that and you know, do it in your spare time and all of that, that I think, you know, I'm not the most successful person on the planet, but I've been so grateful for the opportunity that I've had to do something I really enjoy. And I would love to, believe me, I would love to believe that's because I have an abnormally high level of foresight or intelligence, but isn't it true? It's exactly what you're saying, which is that a lot of life is the merging of circumstance and luck. And let's be real, a bit of networking too, because I wouldn't be where I was if I hadn't reached out to my friend, her name's Deanna, if I hadn't reached out to her before I moved back to Utah. And you know, and if she hadn't been the kind of person who was kind enough to advocate for me and really help me along the way.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that because I think you described this as sort of the linchpin of your career decisions were sort of these people, right? Talk a little bit more about, I mean, you've mentioned two or three people already, but talk a little bit more about who these people were, how you're connected with them, how those conversations happened. Talk to us a little bit about that networking that you did.
Yeah, I've never been a really great networker because I hate feeling like I am either asking someone to do something that they don't want to do. This is why I have never, ever wanted to be in sales because I don't like that feeling. Whether it's true or not, I just don't want to feel that way. And also because I don't like feeling like there's any kind of risk that someone will perceive my behavior as an attempt to get something from them. I don't like that. I'd rather no one ever feel like I had a hidden agenda. So all of the quote networking that I've done for the most part has been through people I had, you know, normal connections with at work who I really liked and respected and who I just created a relationship with irrespective of what that may or may not lead to. So Deanna, for example, was someone that I just knew from Teach for America. I had no idea she was going to be in product management or that I would either, but I loved her and I loved how she thought about things. She's super fun to be around. So I just, you know, stayed in touch with her. And then from School Improvement Network, I met a woman named Rebecca Higgins. She came and became a product manager there. And I in the interview, she was talking about some of her hobbies. And I said to her, we need to be friends. And she was understandably aghast. I don't know that that happens often in interviews. But I loved her. And she ended up moving from School Improvement Network to a company called Kowali, which did higher ed administration software. So we stayed in touch because I just loved her so much as a person, still do. And she ended up saying, hey, there's a product management role at Kowali. Why don't you apply for that? So that's how I ended up at my next role was through Kowali. So it's really just been through people that I had connections with that I really respected and stayed in touch with as friends and that I would be friends with regardless, who then, you know, were kind enough and were willing to advocate for me when it came up that I needed it.
I love that idea of no hidden agenda while networking. It's really good. So I want to ask something. I'm trying to figure out how to ask it, and I've been trying to figure out how to ask it for the last couple of minutes.
Hit me. Go for it.
In product management and in other areas, we hear about a T-shaped individual, right? Where you have a breadth of understanding and a depth. Looking at your LinkedIn profile, it looks like, and you can correct me here, but you have a very, very deep understanding of education. And so all of your roles have kind of been in that space of education in some way. So I'd love to kind of get your thoughts on the importance of that depth and what that's meant for you as a product manager. And what that might mean for some of our listeners who are looking at this and going, well, is this for me? And do I need to go deep into something, or can I just be broader? How does that all work?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's actually one that comes up a surprising amount with me, because people see my background, and understandably so, they assume that I'm like incredibly passionate about education and it's my sort of like my life's work, or that I have a lot of really in-depth knowledge on the particulars, maybe at an academic level. And the interesting thing for me actually is that it isn't true. And the fact that I have been in education as long as I have been is more of a product of happenstance than it is a product of me wanting that to be the case. Certainly, the nice thing about working in education is that I don't have to wonder if the thing that I'm doing is meaningful to the world. Because I have thought a lot about that the farther I've gotten in my career as to whether I would want to work at company X or company Y because of the products that they create. And so it's been nice to have that comfort that, like, no, I do believe in education. I think it's really important. But I actually have just ended up in this because I think probably because that's where I started. I really don't think that the depth that it looks like I have, and maybe I do have, is that all that critical. And I really, in fact, think that breadth is super important. And I actually just finished listening to a book that it's a bit repetitive, so you could probably 2x it, but it's called Range, and it's about generalists versus specialists in the working world. And so you could easily look at my experience and assume that I am a specialist. I'm a specialist in education, but in fact, I'm really not, and I'm much more of a generalist. And the reason why that's the case is because what you don't see from my LinkedIn is a lot of my background has been really varied prior to college, the things I was interested in, the things that I spend time in. So I was never necessarily, like, you know, some kind of savant at any of these things. But, you know, I played an instrument and was in a symphony. I volunteered at a few different hospitals. I worked as an editor in multiple publications and was a writer for magazines. And I did PR and marketing for one of the programs at the university that I went to. So my exposure to different topics was actually really broad in the formative years of me being able to think through what I wanted to do. So even writing as a journalist, I mean, that was such an amazing, even though I don't remember why I chose it, I'm grateful that I did, because the thing about being a journalist, for example, is that you come to appreciate pretty early on in your training that nobody really cares about all the fluffy, flowery stuff. Your goal is to get people the information that they need and to get an idea across. So then I was able to take that into teaching and help inform my teaching for how I interact with my students and how I present information. And then that went to product management, the amalgamation of those writing skills and then the presentation and the educational skills of teaching into product, which is so much a job of persuasion and sharing and teaching information, even if it's just, oh, and listening. Let's not forget that. That's the other thing I learned from being a journalist was how to actually listen to what people are saying to you to try to understand and connect the dots behind the scenes, as people aren't always all that, you know, upfront or, you know, they're thinking out loud. So they're not necessarily connecting those dots for you. All of those skills, I believe, were really good primers for me to be a good product manager. And none of those were dependent on any depth, actually, because I was never a career journalist and I never had a career in marketing or PR. And my career as a teacher was fairly short-lived. So I think I've actually really benefited the most from a really broad exposure to a lot of topics. And in fact, one of the things that has informed my work at Campfire the most is, this is going to sound so ridiculous, but in 2009, after I graduated and, you know, there were 9 jobs in the country, I had a pretty significant identity crisis because I was thinking, I've worked so hard to be successful. It really matters to me. I had 4 jobs at one time in college and volunteered in elementary school and worked on a student journal. And I was trying to do all these things to make it so that I could be successful. And ultimately I just could not overcome the economy at that time and the skill set that I had. So I was like, what is the point of all of this? And So I spent several months actually on my own researching what was the point of all of this, right? Like what am I supposed to do now if I don't have this like super successful career that I'd envisioned for myself? And so I read books on neuroscience and I read philosophy and I got really, you know, from like a very normal person's level, deep into physics and all of these things that actually helped me cultivate a perspective that has made a big difference on our product strategy at Campfire. And so it's like, who would have thought that my existential crisis in 2009, which is what I refer to it as, with people who know me well enough, like have heard that multiple times, and the exposure that I had to just things I was reading on my own would help formulate my perspective about how you build software. I mean, it just, I would never in a million years would have thought that. And so I really don't think that I think being deep can be super helpful for particular roles in product, like maybe being a technical product manager and you know a lot about the technological side of things. But my experience has been that the better that you are at combining ideas and insights across any and all topics and industries, the more effective you'll be in your role as a product manager. Because the interesting thing that I've noticed is that I've worked in K-12 software, I've worked in higher ed software, and now my primary buyer at Campfire is in HR. And the really interesting thing that I've noticed is that every buyer thinks that their particular industry is incredibly special and unique and different. And so they require unique and special and different solutions for their products. And I don't want to discount that HR's world is very different from a superintendent's world, which is very, I mean, contextually, it's true that those things are different. But my broad exposure to a lot of different industries and concepts and information helps me to be able to look at that and think, well, the reality is that you are humans and all of these industries are made up of humans, and humans don't have that really that wide variety of needs, and they really don't actually have that wide variety of dysfunction that they introduce into a workplace despite their best intentions. And so my messaging needs to adapt to the context that you're in, and I really need to understand the reality and the roles of the people that and the part that they play in what you're doing. But my foundational understanding of the chaos that humans introduce into any system helps me to create a product that solves for that, regardless of what industry I'm working with at that particular time.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much. This has been such a delightful conversation for us. We've loved to have you on and to hear your experiences and your insights and advice. I think for aspiring product managers are just spot on. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening today. These people's stories are incredible. Each one is unique and comparable all at the same time. We hope you enjoy them as much as we do. As product managers, we are always looking for feedback. So please don't hold back. Let us know how we are doing. Before you go, please consider subscribing. Also, give us a rating. It really helps this podcast reach an even greater audience.